Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 122. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com and sitting in, as he has done most of the offseason for my co-host David Todd, is the great Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Friday to you, brother.
Happy Friday, Dave. And, you know, we're going to talk about some of the football contracts in today's podcast, Antonio Brown's, you know, potential future deal. But, man, I look at an NFL contract, and then I look at an NBA contract, free agency starting, you know, basically today, and it's just peanuts in the NFL. If you're a kid growing up, grab a basketball, find a hoop, don't play football.
Yeah, teach your kid to be a left-handed pitcher too while you're at
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's it.
Because, boy, baseball and basketball, they throw some of this money around like it's absolutely nothing, yeah. You know.
Mozgov is getting $65 million, and he didn't play this year. Crazy.
I don't even know who that is. I got to admit, I mean, basketball is, of the four major sports on my list, basketball is the fourth. I used to follow it, Alex, probably in the in the 80s, early 80s, you know. I can remember the Lakers and the Celtics and all like that. But even then, when I mean follow it, mostly around playoff time,
yeah.
you know, really for the most part, basketball, really, I don't know. I just haven't been a big fan. I will watch the tournaments, you know, the NCAA and stuff like that. But absolutely incredible the amount of money these guys are throwing around. And let's face it, you know, NFL, these guys don't make bad money either. Did you see the tweet on Thursday? Do you know what the CFL's per team salary cap is?
I did. You sent it out, but I'll let you tell the viewers of what it is.
It was just over $5 million a team. I mean, goodness gracious! Well, that shows you one, you know, why the Canadian Football League's probably been able to survive as long as they have. I mean, when you can get a whole roster, you know, under contract with the cap being just over $5 million. Goodness gracious! That I knew it was low, but I don't think I ever remembered knowing it was that low. I thought over the years it kind of escalated. Yeah, I don't know what I thought, 8, 9, 10 million or something like that, but $5 million a team—that's absolutely
incredible.
You'll
have to put on the research hat and see when the last time the NFL salary cap was $5 million. What year do you think that was? 1970? I don't even know.
God, I mean, when did the salary cap come into? I can't even tell you when the NFL salary cap came into, into relevance, you know, existence.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd have to start with that first and foremost. But that was a sobering kind of number to read on Twitter on Thursday. Unfortunately, Alex, we're going to have to start, I think, today's show by talking more about stuff that happens off the field, and that includes talking about more stuff, you know, regarding James Harrison and the league wanting to interview him, still going back to that Al Jazeera report. The NFL and the NFLPA appear to have been trading letters over the course of the last week saying, you have the NFLPA saying, look, you know, unless you tell us what kind of evidence you have on these players, and on these players meaning James Harrison, Clay Matthews, Julius Peppers, Mike Neal, obviously Peyton Manning, but that's kind of a lesser concern being as how he is now retired. But, you know, the NFLPA says, look, we don't just want you interviewing our players and ask them about these allegations, you know, that have since been recanted by this guy. unless you provide us evidence that have reason to have to interview them. And the NFL is the latest to fire back in a Thursday report that was passed along by Lindsey Jones of USA Today. In so many words, correct me if you think I'm reading this wrong, interpreting this wrong, the league feels that it has enough evidence to continue on with this investigation and interview these players, and they don't feel like they have to reveal this evidence to the players or the NFLPA for the reasons of that it could jeopardize the investigation and yada yada. And Adolfo Birch, in so many words, well, I mean, this was kind of the quote that Jones has in her Thursday report, reiterated to the NFLPA in his latest letter, that active players in the league are that they're seeking interviews with have an obligation to cooperate with the league and with their investigations, and they may be disciplined for failing to do so. So that's kind of a shot fired over the bow of the boat there. In my opinion, it's the NFLPA is next up on the dance card with how they're going to respond to this. I think we're going to see several more of these barbs traded back and forth here, but I think the long and short of it here is at some point in time, James Harrison is probably going to have to meet with the league.
Right, and I know after last podcast, I'm sure the vast majority of Steelers Nation disagreed with my stance, and I got some comments and some good discussion about it in the comment section of the last podcast. But that's the bottom line, Dave, and that's the whole reason why I made my point to begin with, is we all know that James Harrison is going to have to talk to the league, whether he likes it or not, and clearly he doesn't like it, and he doesn't like them, and that's fine, and I totally understand it, but he's not going to be able to get Goodell into his house, and he's going to have to talk to the league. So this kind of grandstanding is just, it's not going to work, and the league is going to squish him, and they're going to feel all the more powerful for it because they've took down the quote-unquote bully that they see in their eyes. So, I mean, if you don't talk to him or to the league, they are going to say that you did not cooperate, which is very similar to what happened in the Brady case, and he is going to be subject to discipline for that.
And the league is saying that, in essence, they're claiming that the CBA provides no stipulations, that evidence of potential wrongdoings needs to be provided to the NFLPA or player before, for them conducting interviews with those in question. Now, as much as I, as much as I do know about the CBA, it's more of a, from a different rules, standpoint, and of course salary cap standpoint. I have not taken the time to go in and see if I can find, whether or not this is true. One would think that the league wouldn't come out and say something like this in a letter if they didn't think it was true. I guess has it helped? I don't know how to properly phrase this. Has Harrison making all this public and kind of portraying the league as the big bad bully? That only helps in public perception, right?
It helps in public perception, sure, but it doesn't really matter because the league doesn't care about that. And I mean, yeah, they've had their PR problems, but no one's going to stop watching. Their business is better than ever. Roger Goodell took a pay cut and still got $32 million. It doesn't matter to them about public perception and any of that stuff. The bottom line is that he's hurting himself by trying to take on the league and the league. And the other thing with Harrison is that he's going against union wishes. He's kind of doing his own lone wolf thing by making these ultimatums. Goodell, you're going to come to my house, by agreeing to the interview, because if you take his Instagram post, at face value, he's agreeing to the interview, which the NFLPA said do not consent to this interview. So now Harrison's given up very important leverage there, and by agreeing to the interview, he's validating the desire for the NFL to investigate. He's not going to make things easier on him when the NFL tries to come down on him if he doesn't want to cooperate.
It's fun to write about James Harrison saying, under my conditions, blah, 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 Roger Goodell needs to be there, this needs to happen at my house before training camp gets underway. that's all fun to look at and fun for Steelers fans to kind of throw out there and come and get him Roger, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. But James, in my opinion, would have been better served if he was going to take this publicly, is to take the letters publicly, but at the same time say, before I do any of this, you're going to have to answer to the NFL. This should have been more about the NFLPA versus the mm-hmm. league instead of James Harrison versus the league, in my opinion.
100% right, Dave. And that's what I've been trying to say all along. It's not that I want James Harrison to lay down. I had one longtime listener, Steve, and I appreciate the listen, but, you know, he's saying, excuse me, that, you know, my complete submission to Roger Goodell was painful to listen to. I'm not saying to completely submit. You can be a jerk. You can be, you know, speak your mind. I'm totally cool with that, but you have to do these things in the right way. You have to find friends. You have to have help. You can't take on the league by yourself. I'm sorry, James. It's just not going to happen. You have to work with your union. They're there for a reason, and go through the appropriate channels to make sure you don't put yourself in a really difficult spot, which I think Harrison is. So like I said, he went against basically everything that the union said to do, and now he's kind of, you know, he's either going to have to stick with his guns and not talk to the league at training camp, which will produce very bad results for him, or he'll have to cave and the NFL wins again.
I, you know, by him throwing out what he did out there on Instagram, I don't think he hurt himself in that, and I don't believe he gave up the quote unquote leverage to speak, because I mean he's part of a union regardless, and you know, he can just come back and says, look, I didn't. There's other ways for him to get, you know, the league's not going to come and say, well, James said he was going to meet with us, and now he has to meet with us because he said that kind of thing. This is still my contention all along is that I didn't mind him kind of lone wolfing it, but he should have lone wolfed it a little bit better while hiding behind the shield of the NFL Players Union along with it. Now, do I think that James Harrison is ultimately going to have to meet with the league? Obviously, yes. And especially now the league has kind of come out and you know, with the shot pretty much saying, look, you know, failure to cooperate, good getting disciplined, yada, yada. Now, how is James Harrison going to react to this latest kind of, well, call it what you will, I mean, it's a threat,
right?
You know,
yes.
In so many words. You know, is James going to throw out there, I'm, you know, it's not going to help him for James to go on Instagram or Twitter right now and say, well, the heck with y'all, I'll just take my ball and go home the way Peyton Manning did and I'll retire.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to do anybody any good whatsoever. Now, obviously, one would say, well, James has nothing to hide. You know, why isn't this interview just taking place right now? That's not the principle here.
Right.
You know, I think the thing here is the NFLPA just doesn't want the league chasing down every Tom, Dick, and Harry's accusation of steroid use anytime something like this happens. You know, I think that's the premise here.
Yeah.
Now, the league, like I said, the league evidently makes it sound like they have some credible evidence outside of he said, she said. And if that's the fact, I mean, if that is indeed the fact, should they reveal some of that to the player in the league or in the NFLPA?
That's a really difficult question. I don't know if they have evidence or not. They could totally be bluffing, and because they're not going to tell anyone, they can totally bluff, and no one's going to be able to say anything otherwise. I know this is not a courtroom, and they're two totally different things, a private business versus, you know, a government, but, you know, if the cops were investigating you, they don't have to probably give you all their, you know, information before they talk to you, because it does compromise, because you can now know what you're expecting to be talked about, and you can plan for things, and, you know, hypothetically speaking, you know, I'm not assuming that Harrison's guilty, but you understand the principle behind that. I don't know. That's a really tough one, I guess. I mean,
is this going to end up in court?
Oh, man, it better not. I don't need, I mean, after all this Deflategate nonsense that's been going on for 18 months, whatever it is now. I don't want to deal with another court case. It's Harrison's final. It's Harrison's final year, man. I want to put the focus on football and winning the Super Bowl, not on courtrooms and litigation and threats and just kind of all this nonsense.
Well, I mean, I know we hope it doesn't go that route, but could you see it going that route where the league tries to suspend whoever, Harrison, Matthews, whoever, and then, of course, they appeal, and then it gets sent.
Yeah.
You know, they're able to play in the meantime. Put it to you this way. I don't think James Harrison's going to miss any games either way this season.
Yeah, the appeals would...
Because if he's suspended, appeal. You just appeal it, to the, you know, force it to the higher courts or whatever, you know, sort of like Tom Brady did, right?
Right, yeah. There's a good chance of that. I think ultimately it doesn't go to court. I think ultimately the players do the interviews at some point on some terms. I don't know what those terms exactly are going to be. The NFL concludes its investigation. It does not find enough evidence, and this thing, mercifully, all goes away. That's my guess, at least.
And I absolutely hate talking about this.
I do
this stuff.
Yeah, and I know Steeler fans hate me for quote unquote defending the league. I'm not trying to defend the league. I'm okay with taking stands. I'm okay with fighting the league, you know. But you have to do it the right way. And again, they want to talk to you at training camp. It's not that cumbersome. You're not having to go anywhere. It's for a 15-minute thing. Call them jerks. Call them idiots. Tell them it's a bogus report. All that. That's totally cool with me. Just don't get yourself suspended, James. It's just not worth it right now.
When I signed up to become a mother's basement blogger, this was not what I this is not what I signed up to talk or write about. And I absolutely, man, I hate writing, having to do the right. You know who's good at this stuff is Matthew Marks. is good at writing this stuff. But unfortunately, sometimes when this news breaks, it's in the afternoon, and Matthew's back in his coffin for the day, kind of thing, so to speak. Just kidding there. But
it's so weird that being a football fan is like, you know, 50% football is like 50% lawyer that you have to be. It's a weird thing to sign up for.
Yeah, and I don't mind the negotiation agent legalese. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of, you know, rules kind of end of it. But, man, I absolutely hate this end of it. But, you know, it's our duty to kind of discuss this. And with that, we'll leave that portion until the next part of the fire back comes from, I'm guessing it'll be the NFLPA who will respond next on this. Which way do you want to go now? The Dallas Cowboys will play the Pittsburgh Steelers in Week 10 of the 2016 season, and as of yesterday, they'll have to do so without inside linebacker Rolando McClain because, shocking news, he was suspended for the first 10 games of the 2016 regular season for violating the league's substance abuse policy. McClain, of course, isn't any stranger to suspensions. I think the funny thing, I shouldn't say funny thing, I think the ironic thing out of all of this here is that after McClain misses those first 10 games, with I believe the 10th being against the Steelers in mid-November, he'll be back for the game in Week 11 against the Baltimore Ravens, the team that he played one season for in 2013. Rolando McClain's not going to the Hall of Fame. He's not going to be in the Ring of Honor, whatnot, you know, for the Cowboys. But I thought he played in the games that he did play in last year. I thought he played well, and I think this is a pretty decent loss for the Cowboys.
Yeah, it is. And you know, you take everything that you can get, so that'll help Pittsburgh. But you know, with 10 weeks into a season, the landscape's going to change. I mean, you know, the loss of Rolando McClain's probably going to be the last thing on my mind based on what's going on in Pittsburgh, what's happening in Dallas. They will have Randy Gregory back. They'll have DeMarcus Lawrence back. Those are two huge additions that they're going to get midseason because their defensive line, defensive ends are just nothing right now. So by that point, the Cowboys should be at close to full strength. And so I think that kind of mitigates the loss of McClain.
Could you believe that when Cantor Technology released at the beginning of the June, you know, at beginning of June, they released lines, betting lines for every game in the NFL, excluding, of course, Week 17, because so much can happen during that time, leading into that game, teams can have clinched, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, they already had the Steelers being 8.5-point favorites over the Cowboys in that game.
Wow, that's a really heavy favorite. Man, you can.
I would have never guessed that. You know, I mean, because let's face it, this is a Cowboys team that, regardless of what shape their defense is in, I mean, obviously they're going to be hurting at the start of the season now with three key defensive players missing four games. But, you know, assuming Tony Romo comes back healthy, you know, they of course went out and drafted
Ezekiel Elliott
out of Ohio State. And that offensive line of theirs is going to be something once again. They got Dez Bryant there. This is an offense that many think could, you know, like the Steelers, probably average 29 to 30 points a game. And it's just kind of surprising that the Steelers would be 8.5-point favorites this far out.
Yeah. But just real quick on the suspension front, the big news, the big, I guess, final sigh relief for me, nothing on Le'Veon Bell, so I think you can finally put those rumors to bed about him skipping a drug test.
Absolutely. And we would expect that to remain the same for the rest of the offseason here. Let's see, which way, why don't you tell us a little bit about this technology that proves Darius Hayward Bay is the fastest player in Pittsburgh?
It was just kind of a fun little article. Jeremy Fowler from ESPN, I guess the Steelers are using some GPS-type technology, some for fun, some for actual learning. It's kind of becoming a little bit more prevalent in the NFL, where teams are tracking steps and seeing, you know how much work players are getting in practice to help manage reps. If a guy's working too much, getting so many reps, taking so many steps, they can kind of scale things back a little bit. So the Steelers have done a little bit of that. Again, they've kind of shifted. I don't know if I call this analytics, but you know, analytics technology. The Steelers are kind of really starting to get into that more. Now, and then I guess Hayward Bay, on the fun side of things, was the fastest player they've measured at 25 miles an hour. So it just proves that, you know, Hayward Bay is still at 29 years old and some change, still the fastest guy on this team, which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and they didn't let him run in that recent run.
And that's the reason why, I think. Yeah.
If, you know, I always go back with Darius Hayward Bay, you know, when he was coming out and then all of his early troubles that he had. Small hands, you know. I think that played a role in those drops that he had. And then I think his confidence kind of got, you know, jilted there for a while. I mean, if he had bigger hands and survives those first couple of seasons in Oakland, I mean, what kind of player would he be at this? I mean, that's a lot of ifs, but I mean, he still has it. I mean, where do you think his speed ranks with in comparison with Mike Wallace?
Man, I'd love to see them race. I think it'd be neck and neck, to be honest with you. They'd be real close. Yeah, I think, and again, this is the what ifs that you just said, but, you know, had Hayward Bay been drafted by a more stable organization, I don't think he would have ever reached the expectations of the 7th overall pick, but I think his career would have been a whole lot better than what it is looking at the final picture of it right now.
Yeah, I think his confidence was kind of shattered early on.
Yeah.
His hands has always been, he'll never be accused of not being a great X's and O's guy. I mean, he's smart as a whip.
Extremely hard worker. That's the big thing.
Yeah, extremely hard worker. A good locker room guy from everything that I read and have read in the past about him. A guy. Look, I mean, easily a better blocker than a guy like Mike Wallace is or was.
Mm-hmm.
Quite arguably, you can make an argument right now, best blocking wide receiver on the Steelers they currently have. Kind of guy here. So, you know, a guy that stepped up last year for the Steelers, during Martavis Bryant's suspension early on last year. He's going to have to do the same to start the season, I think, this year. But a guy, I think, when all said and done, 30 to 40 catches at most, right?
Yeah. Like I said before, I think the DHB has a good chance to start the year, but I think Coates will eventually kind of really siphon away snaps, and maybe even after the first month of the year, just to throw a number out there, Coates will kind of really be the starter and get a lot of the looks the rest of the way.
You and I have taken on the task of ranking the top 100 Steelers, I guess all time is what we're kind of calling it. And when we – you were more apt to do this.
Yeah, I twisted your arm into it just for full disclosure.
Then I think I was. And what we did – and for those of you that haven't already seen, Alex has already – done 100 through 90. We're going to be flipping off doing these every 10. My second set of 10 will come out today. Today being Friday, I have it all almost finished up there. So look for that later in the day here. What a chore this is, man.
Wasn't it fun though? Didn't you enjoy it a little bit to go back to the old players?
Yeah, but I think we could have both spent another 8 hours each on this and still come away thinking that it still wasn't done correctly. Mm-hmm. And here's for people that don't know, Alex ranked his, what we did is we ranked our 100 individually. Then we kind of looked at it. And then I think we spent an hour and a half on Skype,
yep,
didn't we?
Yes.
And I said, well, this will only be a 15 or 30 minute phone call. Well, hour and a half later, we're still scrambling to try to get off of a call with each other, trying to compare. And what we did is we grouped them into groups of 10 at that point. And then now at this point where we're at now, it's up to each of us to take those 10 and rank them how we seem fit. And the one thing that I kind of noticed in this, Alex, and I think the listeners and readers will as well as we move along here, is that I kind of gave more credence to players who you never saw play a down, talking about those 70, mm-hmm, the Steelers teams of the 70s and 80s and early 90s, because of longevity and because of kind of maybe where they ranked on the franchise's all-time list.
Mm-hmm.
I gave those kind of players a little bit more, I guess, credence than you did. And you, on the other hand, players that kind of in the era that you've been able to watch play, you kind of gave a little bit more credence to, in addition to players that played way, way back.
That's my era, the pre-Noel era.
Right, right. You know, I'm talking about, you know, the 30s to the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I tipped my hat to a few of those in that era, but it seems like you were either all the way back or current day. Am I wrong?
I'd have to look at my list again. I don't think you're totally off base with that comment, though.
I'm not saying you ignored,
yeah,
you know, those middle eras. Which, by the way, it sucked to be a Steelers fan.
Yeah, the mid to late 80s and all that.
During some of that time there, for sure. But, I mean, obviously, I remember a lot of that,
mm-hmm,
you know, and I have a lot of games downloaded from that. You know, and granted, I know my Steelers history going way back as well, too. But I just found it kind of interesting. Obviously, if I would have put this list together with somebody my own age, you know, I think probably we match a little bit more,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Right.
In fact, you know, you had David DeCastro, and people are going to see even in the 10 that I do today, I think, who's in there? Cameron Hayward, Marquise Pouncey. I think those are two guys that are still on the team that are going to end up being ranked in my set of 10. Did I even have either of those guys ranked in the top 100 initially?
You had Pouncey.
You
had Pouncey, not Hayward, though. I'm almost positive of that, yeah.
Right, and I know I didn't have DeCastro ranked in the top,
right,
top 100, whereas I think you had him ranked 97.
Yeah.
So that just goes to show, not that I, you know, you were talking about so many players here, and you were talking about these players being so young. But anyway,
mm-hmm,
we're going to step on a lot of toes, I think,
yeah,
throughout the process, and there's no perfect way to kind of rank these guys. So, you know, read it, take it for, you know, with a grain of salt. Hey, if you want to pass along your top 100 to us, we will gladly read it.
Yeah.
And we will gladly laugh and point our fingers at you when you do so. If you want to do that, you can go send us an email, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Just let us know it's your top Steelers 100 of all time. So look for us to try to kind of get that series in groove and winding down here, over the course of the next, 10, 15 mm-hmm. days, something like that.
Right,
there.
Right.
Let's see, moving right along. Should we get to talking about the Steelers safety positional group, or do you want to get to anything ahead of that?
No, let's go to safeties. We'll spend some time talking about the Steelers safeties.
All right. Well, you can't have a discussion about the Steelers positional group when it comes to the safeties without kind of really first talking about a guy like Mike Mitchell, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, he was my pick for the most polarizing Steeler, and I think he came in second on our very, very informal poll behind Jarvis Jones, because I think he really is the most polarizing guy, because some people still hate him for his social media tirade his first year here, his antics, his celebrations, you know, the big showmanship after a hit, stuff like that. But I think he played great football last year. He's a tough guy. He's a leader. I think his coverage skills are underrated. You know, the guy's been able to create some turnovers in the secondary. He's tough as nails to play through injury. He throws his body around. He's an enforcer. He's an intimidator across the middle. Receivers know who he is and where he is, and I think that probably is always in the back of their minds when they go across the middle and see 23 there. So I think he's still a slightly underrated piece of the Steelers defense.
And I think, too, I think in some eyes, having to replace a guy like Ryan Clark,
mm-hmm.
you know, come in, and quite honestly, I don't think him and Troy Polamalu meshed early on, you know, with each other. Of course, Mike Mitchell was banged up early on as well, too. That didn't help him in the eyes of several Steelers fans, even though he's yet to miss a game,
mm-hmm.
you know, that groin and or groins, plural, injuries hurt him, I think, obviously, during his first season with the Steelers. I think it was really, really obvious how much his shoulder hurt him during the second half of last season in particular. He still didn't miss games. I like intimidating safeties such as Mitchell. I'm okay with the occasional 15-yard, penalty, the fine for kind of setting the tone the way he did. I'm not kind of okay with him kind of showboating over it,
mm-hmm.
you know, which he has had a tendency to do. Look, make the hit, find the football, walk off the field. That's,
yeah.
you know, kind of my view on it here. I think, though, however, I thought he had I think you could definitely make an argument for maybe a fringe Pro Bowl player last year, right? Or no?
Yeah, there's a lot of great safeties, so I was not upset that he didn't make a Pro Bowl. So
right, but, I'm
yeah.
not saying be upset,
yeah.
but I mean you could consider, well, maybe, you know, in consideration
mm-hmm.
there. He has a chance, a legitimate chance, I think, this year, though, maybe at being a Pro Bowl safety.
Yeah. Again, if you can just, because the last quarter of the year was when the injuries really started to kind of take its toll. The Cincinnati game, I remember well. I think it was the A.J. Green touchdown. He took a pretty nasty shot on. You know, here's the thing about Mike Mitchell, though. You know, we love talking about narratives and spelling narratives, Dave, and I think the one that really sticks with Mike Mitchell is the penalties. But that's the biggest area he's shown improvement on, lowering his tackle angle, coming across the middle, playing smarter, playing cleaner. Give credit to Mike Mitchell for buying into that. I give credit to Carnell Lake for teaching that. He only had two penalties last year. He had five the year before. William Gay had two penalties last year. So you want to talk about who was the most penalized guy, Mike Mitchell's nowhere close on that list. So he's done a great job of playing smart. So I think people have to really shed that idea that he's a penalty machine, because he is not.
Yeah, and he's a better tackler than what the missed tackle stats show us, right?
Yeah, when you understand some of those tackles was the injury last year. I think he's a pretty similar guy to Ryan Clark, Dave.
I do too as well. And you know how you get your safeties to stop missing tackles?
How's that?
you get them stopped up front in the front seven.
Yeah.
You don't put them in the position to miss tackles.
Right, right. But the thing with Mitchell is, you know, he's playing 20 yards. You know, I know you know this, but just explain it real quick. He's playing 20 yards deep all of the time. He's a single high guy. So a lot of time his tackles are in the open field, but the running back has a great chance to break free.
Right, and he's usually having to approach, you know, those final 5 yards flat footed.
Mm-hmm. Full speed. You got a running back as a two way go. You're just trying to
You know, you're sitting there and here comes the running back on you. It's not like, and look, I mean, safeties aren't generally known as the most agile, when it comes to, change of direction and stuff like that. You know, obviously they're more north south guys, in my opinion. Now you do have a lot of athletic type safeties around the league, but for the most part, these guys are north south kind of guys, and especially when they cover, in the secondary, is north south east west, and working on those angles. So, I think Mike Mitchell, as long as he can stay healthy, I think he has a chance at having his best year ever in Pittsburgh, for whatever that's worth. If the front gets a lot of pressure on the quarterback this year, I think you'll see him get a couple more gift interceptions this year. So he's supposed to take more of a leadership role this year in the defense. I think that's welcome. I think that's something he's willing to do as well, along with him and William Gay in the back end. There's absolutely no reason whatsoever why he shouldn't understand where every player on that defense should be, starting this year, being that, he's been around long enough now. We expect a guy like Robert Golden to at least start the season alongside Mike Mitchell. And Robert Golden is a guy that has enough experience now, and he got really a lot more playing time than a lot of us probably saw him getting last season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, most of it came when Will Allen turned his ankle against San Diego, but then they ended up putting him in sub-package football the last quarter of the year in playoffs. We mentioned underrated for Mike Mitchell, but, Dave, Robert Golden is the most underrated player, I think, maybe on the entire Pittsburgh Steelers across the board in the eyes of fans. It wouldn't surprise me in the least to see him start all 16 games comfortably. I did my one step to take series, so I went back and go through the tape again. I watched the three games that Golden started after Allen's injury, and I just couldn't find really many flaws with him. I mean, yeah, he might not be a spectacular guy, providing a ton of splash plays. I think, he left a little meat on the bone there last year. But, I mean, the guy did everything. He's versatile. His run fits are good. He's an excellent tackler. He's physical, puts his face in the fan. I think his coverage, which is usually the knock with Robert Golden, was fine. I couldn't find any plays where I thought his coverage was really, really poor. He's an instinctual guy. He knows, where routes break. He's able to jump routes, get underneath them. This is a guy that I wanted to bring back. I'm glad it was back. This is a guy that started last year while playing his special team snaps, playing as the up-back, the quarterback on punts. Can't forget about that. I mean, this guy would go run 45, 50 yards downfield for a punt and then go play defense and play at a high level. That speaks to conditioning, speaks to intelligence, it speaks to trust. I thought Robert Golden was fantastic last year, and I have no problem with him being the starting strong safety this season.
Better strong safety than he is, or better box safety than he is deep safety.
A little, but again, we say this every time the safety, free versus strong comes up. They move guys around so much. And the big difference, though, was when Golden was in the game and not Will Allen, Mike Mitchell had more freedom. When it was Will Allen was really, truly a box guy 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. You look at that first game, I think it was, I don't remember what week it was. The week, for the first week Golden played, maybe Arizona.
Was that against Arizona or Kansas City? Right?
Arizona's on the tip of my tongue for some reason. You look at that, Mike Mitchell was able to play in the box a lot more. Most of his snaps in the box came against in that Arizona game when Golden was in there. So, you give that defense more flexibility that you didn't have with Will Allen. So I think Golden can play, the deep safety, the single high, and that traditional cover three. I think, he might be best in the box. Mitchell is most comfortable playing single high, but Golden gives you that extra element. Will Allen did not.
I think his biggest liability to the team is inside the red zone, in my opinion. And generally, you could translate that into the box as well too. And it's, when it comes to play action, I should preface all that. I think he needs to get better at reading his keys and not being fooled off of keys at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely understand. I think, the reps, hopefully, again, as you get more reps and you see that more often, you get better. But Was there a particular example where you felt that, or you just?
And I go back to that touchdown against the Cowboys a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that was a couple of years ago. I mean, because I was wrong on goal, and I thought after what I think it was the Vikings game, I thought he was done for. I thought he was a special team only. He proved me wrong. So I mean, I've been wrong about him before, but I can't think of an example this year where I was like, man, Golden really bit terribly on a run fake.
Right, I think the knowledge of his defense obviously has improved, and I think he's going to get every opportunity. Look, I mean, if he's making plays, he's not going to be pulled out of the lineup,
right?
You know, so I think at least the first quarter of the season, he's going to get the opportunity. And look, we saw and we talked about it when we were talking about Timmons the other day. Towards later on in the season, we saw Timmons come off the field in lieu of an extra safety. We saw it a lot more in the playoffs, in the two playoff games. So just because we're going to see Golden probably quite a bit, at least first quarter, first half of the season, 2016, it doesn't mean that we're not going to see the next player that we're going to talk about, Sean Davis, because – I think we're going to see more dime, maybe not early, but more dime as the season rolls on, and with a guy like Sean Davis being on the field, in addition to safeties Robert Gold and Mike Mitchell.
Yeah, what the Steelers, when they unveil their dime package is going to be interesting. Do they do it right away? Do they kind of sit back and wait? I think they're going to try to just carry over from last year and do it right away. So whenever you get in the third and long, obvious pass situations, you're going to see probably Sean Davis get on the field because you get a more flexible guy, you get a more athletic guy. And you want to get your second-round pick on the football field. That's going to be the best way to do it. So I think it's a guy that, I know Cornell Lake says he's going to be a strong safety because they want to focus in on one position, but, they've kind of made mention of maybe playing in the slot, so I could see some of that, if they go dime where they have Sean Davis rolled down. I think that would be interesting. I mean, what about, an idea where Senkos Golson is almost playing more of a safety role because he's got the ball skills and Davis is kind of down in the slot a little bit more because, that's where he's played before. He's a better run. He might be a better run defender. He's got the size and the physicality. So, they did that with Shark his rookie year with mixed results granted, but I think Davis is going to give you a nice amount of versatility. He's a physical, he's a tough guy. And I think he's got those, again, like we said at the time of the pick, it was one of my favorite picks, and he has all the baseline things you look for in a Steelers safety.
And, if you're going to do some zone stuff with him, too, what better guy to have drop into the middle of the field on the rare occasions that you have to do that?
You talked to Sean Davis. To play those rubber concepts, where you're going to have someone sitting underneath there. If you want to run, your cover three and dime, and you have, Davis come down as that, kind of replacing where the linebacker's at and reading and reacting and driving on the football. He'll be a big hitter. He'll be an intimidator in time as well, and he'll lay the lumber. So, you're going to see some big hits in the preseason this year from Sean Davis, and it's going to get fans really, really excited.
People will try to say, going back and looking at Sean Davis's career, at college career at Maryland, oh, man, Sean Davis missed so many tackles, But he made a lot of tackles, too.
Yeah.
I forget, what have I tried? There's a quote I'm missing here that I want to add in here. I can't get it off the top of my head, but look, when you're around the football that much, and you're asked to make as many tackles as he did, you're going to miss your share of tackles.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's all relative.
Don't focus in on the tackles that he missed. Focus in on the tackles that he made during college, which there was quite a few of them. And look, I think the thing that stuck out to me, when just only looking at his cornerback tape, was the fact that he was willing to come up and stop the run, And I think that's, he had no hesitation about trying to beat a wide receiver's block off the edge and head towards the football. That was the thing I think that really stuck out the most. Now, granted, does he need improvement? Do you want him out there against some of the better wide receivers in the league? Absolutely not. I mean, But, however, I mean, if you're going to put someone out there, why not have somebody out there in the slot in dime situations that has corner experience? Ideally, you like his length and the type of athletic physicality that he has to line up against tight ends.
Yeah, and the Steelers are going to face a ton of athletic tight ends this year. I think I did the list whenever he got drafted, but, you know, of course you have Tyler Eifert. You know, could be twice a year. I know he's got the injury. Gary Barnage, you have Rob Gronkowski, Martellus Bennett, I think Travis Kelce, Jordan Cameron, Jason Witten. I mean, there's just the Charles Clay. The list goes on, Dave, this year. So you need somebody to combat that, and I think Davis will do that. Now, the only downside here is just looking at the safety big picture. The depth and the experience, you know, is still a concern, and I don't want Sean Davis to have to start a ton of games at traditional safety because, you know, you do that with a rookie. Of course you're going to run the risk of getting exposed. So I think if the Steelers can get a little bit of luck from health standpoint, and you get Sean Davis in some specific sub-package football where that it's a little bit easier for him to digest and learn, that'll be optimal for Sean Davis and the Steelers.
Shamarco Thomas, a guy that we think is probably going to make the roster this year. I don't think I would go out and bet my house on it. I like his chances, though, from a sheer special teams aspect. This is a guy that just has never become the player that Pittsburgh hoped he would. You know, maybe they envisioned more Troy Polamalu than anything. Obviously not above the head, the kind of player that Troy Polamalu was. But, however, Troy Polamalu was lost during his rookie season with the Steelers. A lot of people forget that. I think Troy Polamalu, more instinctual player than anything else. I don't think Troy Polamalu will be remembered as an X's and O's guy as much as he was instinctual with some of the things that he did. In fact, I'm willing to bet a lot of the interceptions that he made during his career were stuff where the defensive coordinator's first yelling, "Oh no, oh no, oh no," you know, kind of thing before Troy actually makes a play. You know, undersized, a heavy hitter, but a guy that the light just hasn't come on, a guy that still has to think before he moves, and really at this point of his career, we're talking about a special teams player that may or may not be able to give you five to ten snaps a game in a, God forbid, reserve role.
Yeah. Troy was an interesting guy. Just to touch on him real quick, I think a lot of it, was just his ability to make up for some mistakes and make. But I think the big thing with him, though, I don't think he'll ever be remembered as an X and O's guy because that's not the flashy part. But I think he put in a ton of film study to learn where to be and to make those educated guesses. And I think that probably was one of the things that really helped him. I think he was instinctual, but I think that was born out of his film study. And I know. To apply that to Shark, I know Shark works extremely hard, and you don't want to knock him for that, and he's trying out there, and he's talked about how he's, you know, struggled with his confidence. He's talked about that openly before, and he's in a better place this year, which is a fantastic start. But the writing is on the wall when you re-sign Robert Golden, when you draft Sean Davis in the second round. The expectation is not that Shark, you know, Shark had his chance last year, and the window of opportunity is very, very small. And so, you know, Shark's still a good special teams player. And I think still can be, and it's going to be an important cog on there as a gunner and as a, you know, kick coverage guy. As a defensive player, I think that ship has sailed, and I know that Shark probably does not want to hear that, and I don't think he likes to hear that from me because he has me blocked on Twitter. So I'm sorry, Shark, for whatever. I don't think I ever said anything that offensive about Shark, at least especially compared to what I'm sure some people have said. But, Shark is going to be a special team. There's nothing wrong with that, but it certainly was not what we all hoped it to be.
And look, he's had some great preseasons in the past.
Yeah, but if that's on your resume as the number one thing, we got problems.
I mean, he can come up against a run like nobody's business.
He'll hit you.
I mean, he hits like a buck linebacker.
Yeah.
He can fill those gaps and stuff like that. But liability and coverage. Sometimes I just think he thinks too much. I'm not going to doubt that he's not in that film room trying to figure things out. I just think the processing part of it is just not there with him. And I fully expect I'm going to go out. I love to point to the fence, especially during things that I think may or may not happen during a preseason. I think he's going to have one hell of a preseason. I really do. Two or three interceptions, probably when the smoke clears, probably 15 total tackles, probably a forced fumble in there, probably going to lay somebody out at some point. But, playing, preseason football is a lot different than regular season football.
And I hope he has a good preseason because he's the veteran out there compared to a bunch of rookies, that had never played in the preseason before. So he'll play a lot, and he better play well because he's been around for a long time. So that shouldn't be a surprise.
Yeah, Alan Gifford, circle those numbers I just threw out there. Let's see if I'm right. If I'm not right about that, Alan, we won't tell anybody. We won't ever bring this up once again. I only bring up things, predictions like that when I'm right.
Exactly. That's the method. That's the model.
It's my podcast. let's see. It would be a surprise if he doesn't make the roster, though, right?
Correct. Just because of the lack of depth. I don't know who's going to knock him off this roster.
All right, you're one of your favorite players, probably on the roster, Ross Ventrone, and it's hard not to like or root for Ross Ventrone. But plain and simple, he's not a safety. He's a special teams ace, and that's really the only way. Even though we're talking about him in this positional group here, he's not going to make this team as a safety. He's going to make it as a special teams player.
Yep, that's basically what he's done his whole career. He's basically 50-50. Basically, if they have room for him, if no one else really stands out and they don't have a big logjam somewhere else, they'll put Ventrone on. If not, they'll cut him because they know he'll probably be there, in free agency. And I think he might lose out because of all the linebackers there are right now. If they want to, go that extra mile, I know that would be rare, but if they go ahead and, keep 11, for example, if Medicevich and Feeney are just way too good to want you to cut, you might, if they go with six corners, they might only go with four safeties. If Donald Washington, was able to regain what he did whenever he came into the league with Kansas City, I could definitely see, them keeping only four safeties or cutting Ventrone. He's basically 50-50 right now.
Do you view Donald Washington as more of a safety type than you do a corner?
No, I mean, he played corner. I think he played a little bit of safety, too, but I think they brought him in as a corner. He wants some veteran depth in terms of the very end of the depth chart as a corner. They released Isaiah Frey for him, so I think he's a corner.
You just bring him up more from the special teams aspect, Donald Washington?
Just as a guy that could make some noise and make some plays, and he's been in the NFL, and so that's a little intriguing right there. He, coming out of Ohio State, he was a tremendous athlete. He has one of the best verticals ever at the combine, I think 45 inches or whatever the exact number was. I just thought a name you could throw out. There's going to be a training camp darling at a corner and safety like there were last year. I think Jacob Hagan can make some noise in camp.
Look at Jordan Dangerfield. That guy loves special teams.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's any guy that could unseat – and this is safeties only that I'm trying to talk about. I mean, if there's anybody that could unseat a guy like Ross Ventrone and make the team as a fifth safety because of special teams play, it would be Jordan Dangerfield, I think.
Yeah, but I think either they'll keep five safeties with Ventrone as that fifth guy, or they're only going to keep four safeties and they're going to add somewhere else. Because, I mean, Alden Darby, Ian Wall played great last year. Everyone talked about them. Neither of them were stuck around in Pittsburgh at all. So I don't think, even if a safety does do well, the Steelers, for whatever reason, just aren't going to keep that extra guy.
We just don't know a lot. I mean, Ray Venable, a Pitt player, really no chance whatsoever. Not even really practice squad in the limited stuff that I've seen on him. Really the same goes for Jacob Hagan, a first-year player out of Liberty. Nice size on him, though. I mean, he must look like a giant out there in that defensive backfield, 6'3", 200.
Yeah, no, he's interesting because he was with St. Louis the whole time last year, and he made some plays. So, he could make some noise.
Was he much of a special teams player, though? I don't know too much about him other than just some limited tape on defense.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know in-depth about him, so I'm sure he played there. I mean, you have to, but I don't know what his success rate was.
This safety position seems to be a position that we see a lot of turnover at times during training camp, right?
Yeah, because they went in really heavy last year, didn't they? They had like 10 or 11 guys, and I think wasn't it Dangerfield that got released the day before because they had to make room for Kelvin Palmer after Mike Adams went on PUP.
Well, you can tell you never drank a lot of alcohol during your life.
yeah, the memory for a couple more years is still good. How many safeties they have on the roster right now? I don't know if you have the count. I don't have the roster pulled up.
Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Dangerfield, Davis, Golden, Hagen, Mitchell, Thomas, Ventrone, Venipal.
Is that 8?
Okay,
so I think that's less than last year, because I think they started camp with 9, because they had 10 the day before, and I think it was Dangerfield that got released. So they're in a better spot to give guys reps. So I think you saw some of that turnover last year because of all the injuries. Ventrone, remember Rob Golden had that really scary injury for a hot second. So I think you'll probably see a little less turnover just because the numbers are lower. Of course, injuries and stuff could change that, but I think you'll see a little less turnover this year compared to last year.
True or false? All 8 of these safeties make it all the way through training camp.
Oh, false, because you tell me any group of anybody makes it through. It's just unlikely to happen. Injury,
yeah,
whatever.
I think Venipal probably, Venipal or a guy like Jacob Hagen,
yeah.
Depending on how, where they need the numbers and all. But teams got a lot of wide receivers as usual. I think you usually need those. They have one. I mean, you can't really count Le'Veon Bell right now as a running back because you're unlikely to see him much of any during the preseason. Same goes with D'Angelo Williams. Why would you use a guy a lot like that during the preseason and during training camp? So I think the guys that you're going to see a lot of the shuffling going on probably during training camp, because let's face it, a quick hamstring strain for one of these running backs and they're going to be waived injured.
Yep, that's you can't wait around for some of these guys,
You better stay healthy if you're running
back. Just real quick, I think they're one heavy on receiver than normal, and they're one short along the offensive line. They usually like to come in camp with, 15 offensive linemen to give them their 3 teams. I think they only have 14 right now. So, maybe they make a last-second move that depends on who's going on PUP. That's going to determine a lot. Quick question for you, Dave. Do you agree, because the NFL changed this rule a couple years ago, that PUP guys now still count against the 90-man roster? Or they used to not count against it. Do you like that change? Are you indifferent, or what's your feel towards it?
I'm kind of indifferent to that. I do think that team should not be held responsible for a 90-man roster spot because of that.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah, because I think it the players that get screwed about it are the back-end roster guys that have to get moved to make room for some numbers game,
Yeah, I think if you place a guy on active PUP, that should be considered outside of the 90.
Yeah.
Now I also understand where the league's coming from this.
I do too. The teams are gaming the system.
You could throw. Look, I mean, we're not going to play Le'Veon Bell for most of the preseason. D'Angelo Williams has a concussed birth certificate as well, too. James Harrison, it looks like his birth certificate has a couple of bruise marks on it. We're going to throw him on active PUP.
Yeah.
And you can see where
floating 95-man roster. Yep.
right, exactly. So, I don't know. Should they within limits kind of do some of this? Maybe. But if you're going to go that far, where do you end? Why not just make it a 95-man roster?
Right. Yeah.
And if that's not enough, why not just make it a 100-man roster?
Yeah.
So you know me, Alex. I understand, especially when it comes to roster and salary cap and being a fan of helping the NFLPA out and trying to get a lot of these guys longer looks at potential roster spots. I think it's fine right now with the 90-man roster. And obviously, if your lines, Mike Tomlin likes to say, if your lines are getting shorter, well, then you're going to make your moves to help you out on some of those. I mean, we're still going to see roster moves during training camp, So that's a long answer to pretty much saying I guess I'm fine with the way it is with these things here. Kind of wrapping up safety position here, though. We think the four mainstays are obviously going to be Mitchell, Golden, rookie Sean Davis and Shamarco Thomas. The possibility is always there for them to keep five safeties. Mm-hmm. A guy like Ventrone obviously would lead that list, but obviously they're not going to keep anything more than five safeties.
Yep, five's the max. I think Ventrone's that fifth guy, and if they just don't have anyone else worthy of the last spot, I think Ventrone gets it. I think literally Ross Ventrone might be the last guy onto the roster, whoever takes his spot, because they're just going to see, do we have someone else that we really want to keep? If yes, then cut Ventrone. If no, then keep Ventrone and probably cut him at some point when the first injury strikes during the season.
God forbid one of these guys goes down during training camp or the preseason. Are you signing Will Allen back?
You know, I've thought about that a good bit. You know, just watching other players last year than watching Allen. You know, I thought, you know, Allen actually might have played a little bit better than my initial perception. Not great by any means, but is that in the box, you know, run, you know, fill the alley kind of guy. Yeah, it's just depth. It's just really that secondary depth across the board, Dave, really still scare me. And I think, let's say that, you know, God, like you said, God forbid, a Mike Mitchell goes down. The idea of Sean Davis, Robert Golden, and not much else behind is a little disconcerting. So, yeah, I think he's going to be on speed dial.
Yeah, I think, and if you do sign him, you don't sign him to come in and start.
No.
You know, you have to trust and try to get these younger players on the field, plain and simple. Mm-hmm. And you know, you dress a guy like Will Allen, you hope he can give you some snaps on special teams, and God forbid you get in a situation where multiple injuries strike, well then, you know, he obviously would go in and at least be on the be in the right spot on the field, kind of player there. But I don't think you bring him in during training camp or anything like that, unless some sort of injury strikes. And to be quite honest with you, you know, if an injury strikes, I think you bring in a couple other, you know, kind of veterans to get a look, always knowing that you don't need to play you don't need a guy like Will Allen on your roster during training camp or the preseason. You know, at that point, you can add him after week one, not have to guarantee his salary, and still get the same thing, you know, at the bottom of the Cracker Jack box, if you will.
Right, right. Just real quick here, I think last thing to wrap up, we did post our article and link for the training camp donations that kicks off today. There's a GoFundMe link. It's an article up there. You'll see it there on SteelersDepot.com. Please give only if you can. Please keep your lights on. We appreciate every donation. We've already raised a couple $100 so far. I have my big long spiel in the post, so I won't bore you all with it now. But thank you very much. And yeah, we're in training camp month, so very, very excited.
Yeah, and folks, for those of you that reached out to me on Twitter, for the many of you know, Toby passed away this past week, very, very hard on me and my wife. I certainly do appreciate everybody that reached out to Twitter with their condolences on that, and one day at a time for us around here, you know, trying to get past it. So once again, thank you for everybody for reaching out to me on that topic as well. Folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Cedars Depot. You can follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kazora. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the show, right now we're in the stage anyway. We'd much rather you donate to the training camp cause right now, but if you'd also like to donate to the show in addition, you can go to SteelersDepot.com and find the donate button. We'll be pressing these donations all for the next couple weeks as well too. And folks, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.